This is called Captive Among the Comanches. I was born in Alton, Illinois on the 12th day of June, 1837, and am therefore in the 17th year of my age. My father's name was William Smith. My mother's maiden name was Jane Cox. I had 5 brothers and 4 sisters. I think it was in 1846 that we moved to Missouri and settled at a boat landing or ferry called the Jamestown on the North Grand River. My father kept the ferry about 8 years ago. We moved from this place to Texas and settled near Paris in Lamar County. Here, my father and mother died within one day of each other, leaving 6 orphan children behind them. 3 of my brothers have died before the death of my parents. My eldest brother, who was in the Redon Jean Company, now came to settle my father's affairs and make provisions for our support. He secured homes for us with different neighbors, but took the youngest sister, our pet, with him to place her with one of our aunts. One day's journey from the place where he left us, who was attacked by the winter fever and died in 1 week. I have 3 sisters older than myself. Their names are Elizabeth, Cynthia, and Caroline. My brother James and sister Ellen are younger than myself. Ellen was 4 years old when my parents died. Caroline is a dwarf, and the neighbors thought that the medicine the doctors gave her stopped her growth. She was a dear child, and we all loved her because of her misfortune. I lived with several neighbors until the 1st of last February, when I was married to Mr. James Wilson, a young farmer, just beginning life with a little property consisting of horses and cattle. He was 19 years of age when we were married. We knew but little of life, for I was not yet 16, I feared. We were crazy in getting married while we were so young. We had heard that people became rich very fast in California, so we concluded to move and commence life in that distant country. We gathered together the little property we possessed and joined a party of immigrants consisting of 52 men, 12 women, and several children. The father and brothers of my husband are among this number. There were all, in all, 22 wagons, and the whole company was placed under the command of Mr. Henry Hickman. We started from Hunt Company on the 6th of April and took the route for El Paso. We arrived at the Guadalupe Mountains about the 1st of June. Here's the Mescalero Apaches stole from us 19 head of cattle. 6 men started in pursuit, but were driven back by the Indians. We went thence to El Paso. My husband, not being able to travel with Mr. Hickman's train, determined to remain at El Paso till the arrival of another party of California immigrants. 5 of Mr. Paulus Hickman's men stayed with us, while here the Mexicans stole nearly all the property we had and left us unable to proceed on our journey. We could do nothing now except make our way back to Texas. About the last of July, we started on our return with the fragments of our property, which the thieves had despaired. On the 1st day of August, my husband and his father, he left us and fell into the hands of the Indians. I saw them no more after this. I was told that they had been murdered. You may perhaps be able to imagine my feelings when I found myself thus bereaved and destitute in the land of strangers. My misfortune seemed more than I could bear, but I knew not that heavier trials were in store for me. Unable to continue my journey, I returned to El Paso, where I remained till September 8, when I started once more for Texas, with my 3 brothers-in-law, in company with a small party consisting of 5 Americans and 1 Mexican. Mr. Heinhardt, who owned and commanded this train, having some business in Texas which required his immediate attention, traveled very rapidly, and I hoped in a few days more to be in the midst of my friends. As we had seen only 1 Indian on the route, we flattered ourselves that we would not be molested by any of the tribes which infest this route. When near the border of Texas, some of our party stole 3 animals from Mr. Hart and ran off. And Mr. Hart, anxious to overtake the thieves, started in pursuit, taking with him my eldest brother-in-law, I led some 14 years of age, leaving myself, a Mexican, and 2 boys to follow as rapidly as we could. We were at this time within 3 days' journey of a military post at Phantom Hill and were considered out of danger, a discharged soldier being unable to keep up with us, with some distance behind. But I saw nothing of him after this. the day after Mr. Hart left us as we were traveling. About noon, we saw two Comanche Indians charging upon us in front, and at the same time to others who were seen driving up behind. We were all very much frightened, and the Mexican jumped out of the wagon and went toward the Indians in order, if possible, to gain their friendship. The mules of our wagon, four in number, became frightened by the war whoop of the savages, turned out of the road and commenced running as fast as they could. One of them fell down before we had gone far, and the others were then obliged to stop. The Indians then came upon us in order to the Mexican to take the mules out of the harness. While this was going on, I got out of the wagon and looked on in breathless suspense. After the mules were unharnessed, the Mexican was stripped of his clothing, his hands tied behind his back, and ordered to sit upon the ground. One of them went behind him and shot him with the gun, while another stabbed him several times with a large butcher knife. His scalp was cut off before he was dead and put into his own hat. The hat was then worn by one of his murderers. I was stupefied with horror as I gazed on the spectacle and supposed that my turn would come next, but the Indians had insecured the plunder of the wagon, mounted us on the mules, and ordered us to go with them. As I left, I looked back and saw the poor Mexican weltering in his blood and still breathing. We took a northeast direction and traveled slowly till sunset, when we encamped. Here the plunder consisting of blankets, bedding, clothing, bridles, and some money, which I had in my pocket, was divided among the Indians. Some articles considered useless were thrown into the fire. My clothing was taken away except barely enough to cover my person, and the distribution of the captives, the eldest boy, about 12 years of age, was claimed by the chief. I became the property of one of the others. I should have mentioned that one of our captors was a Mexican who had been stolen from the state of Chihuahua. When an infant, he was now as savage as the Indians and claimed the youngest boy for his prey. The scalp of the Mexican was stretched on a stick and dried by the fire. After giving us some meat for our supper, the Indians began to secure us for the night. The boys, with their arms tied tightly behind them, were taken under guard by two of the savages. My feet were tied together, and I was obliged to lie between the other two. I did not sleep any during the night, for I was afraid of being killed. The next day we resumed our journey and traveled in the same direction. The boys were mounted on good animals and had bows and arrows. Their faces were painted Indian fashion, and they looked for like young savages. They appeared to enjoy this new mode of life and were never treated with excessive cruelty. I was mounted on a good horse, but being obliged to sit astride the animal, the journey was exceedingly painful. I had a fine head of hair, which I valued very much, but the chief ordered it to be cut off. I was not a little mortified and seen it decorating the heads of the heartless savages. My head was left entirely unprotected from the intensely hot rays of the sun. Nothing of interest occurred except repeated acts of inhumanity toward me until the 12th day of my capture. At this time we were joined by two Indian men and a squad. These were all the Indians I saw till after my escape. Up to this time, my suffering had been so severe that was to take from me all desire to live, but now they were greatly increased, the squad from whom I might have expected some compassion was evidently the cause of the new cruelties which I now began to experience. My horse was taken from me, and I was mounted on an unbroken mule without a bridle. I had a saddle, but it was worn out and good for nothing except to torture me. This animal would frequently talk me over its head of its own accord, but not being wild enough to gratify the malice of the Indians, the chief would sometimes shake the Mexican scalp before its eyes. The beast would then rear and plunge in the utmost fright, and I would be thrown upon the ground with great violence. I have been tossed from the mule's back as many as half a dozen times a day, and once I was so stunned that I lay a considerable time before my senses returned. My repeated falls greatly amused the Indians, whose horrid peals of laughter might have been heard at a great distance. I never saw them exhibit the first sign of pity toward me. It made no difference how badly I was hurt. If I did not rise immediately and mount the animal which had just thrown me, they would apply their riding whips or gun sticks or the end of the lariat to my unprotected body with the greatest violence. The squad would also help me to rise by wounding me with the point of the spear, which she carried. You may understand one object the Indians had in view of putting me upon this wild animal, and causing me to be thrown so often. When I tell you, I expected to become a mother in a few weeks. They understood my situation. But instead of softening their hearts, it only made them more inhuman and subjected me to greater suffering. I was obliged to work like a slave while in camp. Well, there were any service to perform. I was not allowed a moment's rest. I was compelled to carry large loads of wood on my back, which, being destitute of sufficient clothing, was mangled until the blood ran down my feet. I had to chase the animals through briars and bushes till what clothing I had was torn into ribbons. I brought the animals to camp in the morning and had to watch them till they were ready to start. And if one more wild, then the rest ran off. I must chase and bring him back, and then be knocked down by the savage chief. For my want of skill, when all were ready to start, I had to catch and settle my own wild meal without assistance. If the party did not start immediately, I was compelled to pull at the end of a lariat, which the Indians would fasten to a bush. They seemed to study every method of putting me to death by piecemeal. Exhausted by incessant toil and suffering and extreme anguish from my wounds, I could not work as fast as the Indians desired, and often, when scarcely able to stand and hardly knowing what I was doing, I have been required to do the work of the strongest men, and because of my inability to accomplish my task satisfactorily, I have been whipped till the flesh was raw, large stones were thrown at me. I was knocked down and stamped upon by the ferocious chief, who seemed anxious to crush me like a worm being beneath his feet. My head sometimes fell under the horse's feet, and then the Indians would try to make the beast kick me. After all was ready for the day's journey, I was obliged to travel as fast as the others, riding sometimes over rocks and through bushes, achy and sore from head to foot and exposed to like to cold and heat, sunshine and storm. I had gone 2 days at a time without tasting food, the Indians depending on their hunting for their subsistence, and sometimes had nothing to eat themselves. Unless there was an abundance of food, I really received little or nothing. When any game was killed, the Indians would tear out the heart, liver, and entrails and eat them raw. I suffered exceedingly from thirst. I was not allowed to drink except when in camp. We frequently crossed beautiful streams during the day, and I would beg the privilege of dismounting to quench my thirst. But the Indians would always deny my request with contempt. It was in vain that I pointed to my parched tongue and had blistered in the hot rays of the sun. Nothing could soften them into pity, and I ardently desired death that my torments might come to an end. Every indignity was offered to my person, which the imagination can conceive, and I am at a loss to know how I lived through the barbarous treatment which was inflicted upon me. Frequently my feelings were so outraged that I was tempted to kill my inhuman masters. My indignation burned particular to literally against the chief. And I thought that if I could cut him to pieces, I could die content. We traveled every day. We usually started about 10 o'clock in the morning and halted about 4. The Indians were accustomed to go to the tops of the highest hills and stand there, gazing in every direction. We always spent the night on a hill and were thus exposed to the cold autumn winds. We slept on the ground, generally without covering. When it rained, the Indians made a tent of the blankets and wagon sheet they had stolen from us, but I was not allowed to take shelter in it. I preferred sleeping out in the storm. After my mule had become so gentle that I could ride him without being thrown, it was taken away from me and I was obliged to travel on foot. The road over which we passed was often very rough and stony and full of thorns. My feet were wounded and bruised till they were covered with blood and greatly swollen, but still I was obliged to keep up with the rest of the party. And if I fell behind, I was beaten till I was nearly senseless. The Indians often urged me on by riding their horses over me. Many a mile of that road is marked with my blood, and many a hill there has echoed to my useless cries. I traveled thus on foot some 5 or 6 days after the party were ready to start in the morning. The direction of the route was pointed out to me, and I was required to go before the others in order to not hinder them. They usually overtook me before I traveled far. I had always intended to make my escape. As soon as I found an opportunity, I never expected to reach any friendly settlement. But I did not wish to give the Indians the pleasure of seeing me die. You know, in the morning of the 25th day of my capture, I was sent on in advance as usual. I had eaten no breakfast and was very weak, but the hope of escape supported me. I hastened on as fast as I could, and finding a suitable hiding place, I turned aside and concealed myself in the bushes. After this, I saw no more of my captors. I found afterwards by the tracks of the animals that they had searched for me. They probably thought I would die and therefore took less trouble to find me. I have no doubt the next time they pass that way, they will look for my bones. My situation was now distressing beyond all description. I was alone in Indian country, some hundreds of miles from the nearest friendly settlements. I was without food, without shelter, and almost without clothing. My body was full of wounds and bruises, and my feet were so swollen that I could hardly stand. Wild beasts swirl around, and savage is more wild than the beasts roamed on every hand. Winter was coming on and dead, and its most terrible forms stared me in the face. I sat down and thought of my lonely and exposed situation, but I could not weep. My heart was too full of woe. I remembered the events of the preceding weeks. The husband of my choice had been murdered, and I was not allowed the melancholy privilege of closing his eyes and seeing his remains decently interred. My property had been stolen, and within a few days, March, of sympathizing friends. I hadn't been captured by savages, and after 3 weeks of indescribable suffering found myself wandering solitary and destitute in the midst of the wild prairies. My cup was filled to overflowing, but I resolved to live in hope, if I died in despair. After remaining 3 days in the place where I concealed myself from the Indians, I went to a grove about 3 miles distant and built a little house of bushes and grass. Here I lived 9 days. My only food was the hackberries that grew around the area. I quenched my thirst to the spring nearby. My wounds pained me exceedingly, and I wasted 2 amir skeleton for want of proper nourishment. It rained upon me 7 nights in succession, and my little house was unable to protect me from the cold storms. More than once I spent a sleepless night, perfectly drenched in rain, while the wolves, sometimes coming within 5 steps of me, would make the woods ring with their frightful howlings. They would also follow close behind me. When I went to the spring during the day, I expected sometime to be devoured by them. When I slept, I would dream of seeing tables spread with an abundance of every kind of food. But when I stretched forth in my head to satisfy my hunger, the effort would awaken me, and I would find myself weeping bitterly. When absent from my house on the 12th day after my escape, some new Mexican traders passed by on their way, standing on a small hill, looking them in order to be sure they were not Indians. I was discovered by some 3 or 4 of the party who happened to be some distance behind. They immediately came toward me and soon understood my situation. They kindly offered to take me with them, and I gladly paid for farewell to my house in the woods. The Mexicans put me on a burro and gave me a blanket and men's clothing in which I addressed myself very comfortably. 2 or 3 days after this, we came in sight of a band of Comanches, and it was not safe for me to be seen by them. I was left behind in a ravine with the promise that the Mexicans would return for me at night. As they did not fulfill this promise, I started toward their camp about midnight. While wandering among the bushes, a Comanche Indian passed within 20 steps. I thought I was a captive once more, but fortunately the savage did not see me. I threw myself on the ground and waited for day. In the morning, I started again for the camp of the Mexicans, but before I reached it, I was discovered by one of the trading party who was herding the animals. This man is a Pueblo Indian of San Ildil, Filfonso, and is named Juan Jose. To him, more than to any other man in the party, I own my present freedom. They told me that camp was full of Comanches, and if they saw me, it would be impossible for the party to save me. He made me lie down on the ground while he covered me with dried grass. I lay here all day, and at night I crept forth to quench my almost intolerable thirst. One came and brought me some bread and told me not to, by any means, to leave my hiding place the next day. That day lagged slowly along, and I could hear the dreaded command she's passing and repassing and shouting to each other. At night, Juan returned, bringing in another blanket and several loaves of bread, and told me that I must remain here for 7 or 8 days longer, as the party were obliged to go further on and could not take me unless I was willing to become a captive once more. I saw the party disappear the next day, and it seemed as if my hopes of rescue disappeared with them. But I resolved to wait till the appointed time was up. In a ravine nearby, I found a large log, which had been left and burning. This fire I kept alive day and night till the Mexicans returned, and without it probably would have frozen to death, as the weather had become very cold. I covered a hollow log, cottonwood stump with bark and leaves to keep out the cold wind. The stump was my house during my stay here. When I could endure the cold no longer, I would leave my house and run to the fire, but was afraid to stay there long, lest the Indians should see me. The wolves soon found out about my place of retreat, and frequently, while I was in the stump, they would come and scratch around on its top. The hackberries were very scarce here, and had it not been for the bread Juan Jose gave me, I do not see how I could have been kept from starving to death. The 8 days passed slowly by, and I knew not whether to give way to hope or despair. But on the 8th, I heard several persons calling to each other. I feared they were Indians, but they belonged to the trading party, and were on their return to New Mexico. They had lost the place where I was concealed, and were shouting to each other to attract my attention. I was so overjoyed that I rushed toward them, unmindful of briars and sore feet. One gave me a fine horse to ride, and the whole party treated me with the utmost civility and kindness. On the 34th day of our return toward New Mexico, we reached the town of Picos. Here I met Major Carleton and Mrs. Cadet Adams of the U.S. Army, who took the deepest interest in my comfort. Here I lay aside men's apparel and was furnished with a supply from Mrs. Adams' wardrobe. After remaining at Pacos a few days, I was conducted to Santa Fe by the son of Governor Meriwether, and also to the American ladies of this place. I cannot be too thankful for their friendly sympathies and uniform kindness. The past seemed like a horrid dream. I ever related nothing but facts, and no language that I can use can fully express the sufferings of mind and body which I have endured. My two brothers-in-law are still captives, and unless reclaimed will become as savage as the Indians. The Mexicans saw them with the Comanches, but were unable to procure their freedom. One is 12 years old, the other 10, and unless the strong arm of government is lifted for their redemption, there is no hope for them. This was Captive Among the Comanches by Jane Adeline Wilson, from the magazine Old West, number 46776, summer 1972. Nothing of interest occurred except repeated acts of inhumanity toward me until the 12th day of my capture. At this time we were joined by 2 Indian men and a squad. These were all the Indians I saw till after my escape. Up to this time, my suffering had been so severe that was to take from me all desire to live, but now they were greatly increased. The squad from whom I might have expected some compassion was evidently the cause of the new cruelties which I now began to experience. My horse was taken from me, and I was mounted on an unbroken mule without a bridle. I had a saddle, but it was worn out and good for nothing except to torture me. This animal would frequently talk me over its head of its own accord, but not being wild enough to gratify the malice of the Indians, the chief would sometimes shake the Mexican scalp before its eyes. The beast would then rear and plunge in the utmost fright, and I would be thrown upon the ground with great violence. I had been tossed from the mule's back as many as 6 times a day, and once I was so stunned that I lay a considerable time before my senses returned. My repeated falls greatly amused the Indians, whose horde peals of laughter might have been heard at a great distance. I never saw them exhibit the first sign of pity toward me. It made no difference how badly I was hurt. If I did not rise immediately and mount the animal which had just thrown me, they would apply their riding whips or gun sticks or the end of the lariat to my unprotected body with the greatest violence. The squad would also help me to rise by wounding me with the point of the spear, which she carried. You may understand one object the Indians had in view of putting me upon this wild animal and causing me to be thrown so often. When I tell you, I expected to become a mother in a few weeks. They understood my situation. But instead of softening their hearts, it only made them more inhuman and subjected me to greater suffering. I was obliged to work like a slave while in camp. Well, there were any service to perform. I was not allowed a moment's rest. I was compelled to carry large loads of wood on my back, which, being destitute of sufficient clothing, was mangled until the blood ran down my feet. I had to chase the animals through briars and bushes till what clothing I had was torn into ribbons. I brought the animals to camp in the morning and had to watch them till they were ready to start. And if one more, well, then the rest ran off. I must chase and bring him back, and then be knocked down by the savage chief. For my want of skill, when all were ready to start, I had to catch and saddle my own wild mule without assistance. If the party did not start immediately, I was compelled to pull at the end of a lariat, which the Indians would fasten to a bush. They seemed to study every method of putting me to death by piecemeal. Exhausted by incessant toil and suffering and extreme anguish from my wounds, I could not work as fast as the Indians desired, and often when scarcely able to stand, and hardly knowing what I was doing, I had been required to do the work of the strongest man, and because of my inability to accomplish my task satisfactorily, I had been whipped till the flesh was raw. Large stones were thrown at me. I was knocked down and stamped upon by the ferocious chief, who seemed anxious to crush me like a worm beam neath his feet. My head sometimes fell under the horse's feet, and then the Indians would try to make the beast kick me. After all was ready for the day's journey, I was obliged to travel as fast as the others, riding sometimes over rocks and through bushes. Achy and sore from head to foot and exposed alike to cold and heat, sunshine and storm, I have gone 2 days at a time without tasting food. The Indians, depending on their hunting for their subsistence, and sometimes had nothing to eat themselves. Unless there was an abundance of food, I really received little or nothing. When any game was killed, the Indians would tear out the hard liver and entrails and eat them raw. I suffered exceedingly from thirst. I was not allowed to drink except when in camp. We frequently crossed beautiful streams during the day, and I would beg the privilege of dismounting to quench my thirst. But the Indians would always deny my request with contempt. It was in vain that I pointed to my parched tongue and had blistered in the hot rays of the sun. Nothing could soften them into pity, and I ardently desired death that my torments might come to an end. Every indignity was offered to my person, which the imagination can conceive, and I am at a loss to know how I lived through the barbarous treatment which was inflicted upon me. Frequently my feelings were so outraged that I was tempted to kill my inhuman masters. My indignation burned particular to literally against the chief, and I thought that if I only I could cut him to pieces, I could die content. We traveled every day. We usually started about 10 o'clock in the morning and halted about 4. The Indians were accustomed to go to the tops of the highest hills and stand there, gazing in every direction. We always spent the night on a hill and were thus exposed to the cold autumn winds. We slept on the ground generally without covering. When it rained, the Indians made a tent of the blankets and wagon sheet they had stolen from us, but I was not allowed to take shelter in it. I preferred sleeping out in the storm. After my mule had become so gentle that I could ride him without being thrown, it was taken away from me, and I was obliged to travel on foot. The road over which we passed was often very rough and stony, and full of thorns. My feet were wounded and bruised, till they were covered with blood and greatly swollen. But still I was obliged to keep up with the rest of the party, and if I fell behind, I was beaten till I was nearly senseless. The Indians often urged me on by riding their horses over me. Many a mile of that road is marked with my blood, and many a hill there has echoed to my useless cries. I traveled thus on foot some 5 or 6 days. After the party, we're ready to start in the morning. The direction of the route was pointed out to me, and I was required to go before the others in order to not hinder them. They usually overtook me before I traveled far. I had always intended to make my escape. As soon as I found an opportunity, I never expected to reach any friendly settlement. But I did not wish to give the Indians the pleasure of seeing me die. On the morning of the 25th, day of my capture, I was sent on in advance as usual. I had eaten no breakfast and was very weak, but the hope of escape supported me. I hastened on as fast as I could, and finding a suitable hiding place, I turned aside and concealed myself in the bushes. After this, I saw no more of my captors. I found afterwards by the tracks of the animals that they had searched for me. They probably thought I would die and therefore took less trouble to find me. I have no doubt the next time they pass that way, they will look for my bones. My situation was now distressing beyond all description. I was alone in Indian country, some hundreds of miles from the nearest friendly settlements. I was without food, without shelter, and almost without clothing. My body was full of wounds and bruises, and my feet were so swollen that I could hardly stand. Wild beasts swirl around, and savage is more wild than the beast roamed on every hand. Winter was coming on, and death, in its most terrible forms, stared me in the face. I sat down and thought of my lonely and exposed situation, but I could not weep. My heart was too full of woe. I remembered the events of the preceding weeks. The husband of my choice had been murdered, and I was not allowed the melancholy privilege of closing his eyes and seeing his remains decently interred. My property had been stolen, and within a few days, March, of sympathizing friends, I hadn't been captured by savages, and after 3 weeks of indescribable suffering, found myself wandering solitary and destitute in the midst of the wild prairies. My cup was filled to overflowing, but I resolved to live in hope, if I died in despair. After remaining 3 days in the place where I concealed myself from the Indians, I went to a grove about 3 miles distant and built a little house of bushes and grass. Here I lived 9 days. My only food was the hackberries that grew around the area. I quenched my thirst to the spring nearby. My wounds pained me exceedingly, and I wasted 2 emir skeletons for want of proper nourishment. It rained upon me 7 nights in succession, and my little house was unable to protect me from the cold storms. More than once I spent a sleepless night, perfectly drenched in rain, while the wolves, sometimes coming within 5 steps of me, would make the woods ring with their frightful howlings. They would also follow close behind me. When I went to the spring during the day, I expected sometime to be devoured by them. When I slept, I would dream of seeing tables spread with an abundance of every kind of food. But when I stretched forth in my head to satisfy my hunger, the effort would awaken me, and I would find myself weeping bitterly. When absent from my house on the 12th day after my escape, some New Mexican traders passed by on their way, standing on a small hill, looking them in order to be sure they were not Indians. I was discovered by some 3 or 4 of the party who happened to be some distance behind. They immediately came toward me and soon understood my situation. They kindly understood. They kindly offered to take me with them, and I gladly paid for farewell to my house in the woods. The Mexicans put me on a burro and gave me a blanket and man's clothing in which I dressed myself very comfortably. 2 or 3 days after this, we came in sight of a band of Comanches, and it was not safe for me to be seen by them. I was left behind in a ravine with a promise that the Mexicans would return for me at night. As they did not fulfill this promise, I started toward their camp about midnight. While wandering among the bushes, a Comanche Indian passed within 20 steps. I thought I was a captive once more, but fortunately the savage did not see me. I threw myself on the ground and waited for day. In the morning, I started again for the camp of the Mexicans, but before I reached it, I was discovered by one of the trading party who was herding the animals. This man is a Pueblo Indian of San Ildil, Fonzo, and is named Juan Jose. To him, more than to any other man in the party, I own my present freedom. He told me that camp was full of Comanches, and if they saw me, it would be impossible for the party to save me. He made me lie down on the ground while he covered me with dried grass. I lay here all day, and at night I crept forth to quench my almost intolerable thirst. One came and brought me some bread and told me not to, by any means, to leave my hiding place the next day. That day lagged slowly along, and I could hear the dreaded command she's passing and repassing and shouting to each other. That night, Juan returned, bringing in another blanket and several loaves of bread, and told me that I must remain here for 7 or 8 days longer, as the party were obliged to go further on, and could not take me unless I was willing to become a captive once more. I saw the party disappear the next day, and it seemed as if my hopes of rescue disappeared with them. But I resolved to wait till the appointed time was up. In a ravine nearby, I found a large log, which had been left and burning. This fire I kept alive day and night till the Mexicans returned, and without it probably would have frozen to death, as the weather had become very cold. I covered a hollow log, cottonwood stump, with the bark and leaves to keep out the cold wind. The stump was my house during my stay here. When I could endure the cold no longer, I would leave my house and run to the fire, but was afraid to stay there long, lest the Indians should see me. The wolves soon found out about my place of retreat, and frequently, while I was in the stump, they would come and scratch around on its top. The hackberries were very scarce here, and had it not been for the bread Juan José gave me, I do not see how I could have been kept from starving to death. The 8 days passed slowly by, and I knew not whether to give way to hope or despair. But on the 8th, I heard several persons calling to each other. I feared they were Indians, but they belonged to the trading party and were on their return to New Mexico. They had lost the place where I was concealed and were shouting to each other to attract my attention. I was so overjoyed that I rushed toward them, unmindful of briars and sore feet. One gave me a fine horse to ride, and the whole party treated me with the utmost civility and kindness. On the 34th day of our return toward New Mexico, we reached the town of Picos. Here I met Major Carlton and Mrs. Cat Adams of the U.S. Army, who took the deepest interest in my comfort. Here I lay aside men's apparel and was furnished with a supply from Mrs. Adams' wardrobe. After remaining at Picos a few days, I was conducted to Santa Fe by the son of Governor Meriwether. And also to the American ladies of this place. I cannot be too thankful for their friendly sympathies and uniform kindness. The past seemed like a horrid dream. I ever related nothing but facts, and no language that I can use can fully express the sufferings of mind and body which I have endured. My two brothers-in-law are still captives, and unless reclaimed will become as savage as the Indians. The Mexicans saw them with the Comanches, but were unable to procure their freedom. One is 12 years old, the other 10, and unless the strong arm of government is lifted for their redemption, there is no hope for them. This was Captive Among the Comanches by Jane Adelin Wilson, from the magazine Old West, number 4677, 6th summer, 1972.